Hey there, welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. We are always online at npr.org/Bryant Park. We here at the BPP, we're an equal opportunity kind of news conglomerate. We're all about the grassroots, the democracy, the people. This is your chance, people. We talk about what you've been emailing to your friends, talking about online. We wrap it up and deliver it to you in a segment that we call The Most. Mike Pesca.
I bring you first The Most from Channel 2 in Baltimore. Your name for news, I'm assuming, is their motto. And they did one of these stories where they looked at all the food that the restaurants say doesn't have very many calories. And they did some testing. And it turns out all that food had lots of calories. And it was one of those where all the other ABC affiliates get in on the act and do their own riffing on the same set of facts. But let's hear what Channel 2 Baltimore had to say about some of this supposedly calorie low in calorie food.
Order of Macaroni Grill's Pollo Magro Skinny Chicken tested 522 calories more than advertised and 43 more grams of fat.
43!
Number two on the list, Chili's Guiltless Grilled Salmon. It's hardly guiltless. The menu reads 480 calories and 14 grams of fat. The lab we used found the salmon had 664 calories, 35 grams of fat in our serving.
And I went to
frying it in lard and sugar coating it.
I went to all the different stations. Man, they love that guiltless chicken. The Channel 7 in Baltimore said they should feel guilty. Everyone did their own little riff on that. So they nailed them. Channel 2, hats off to you.
I'm having trouble manufacturing outrage about this. It's not that. It's news you can use.
It depresses
also,
me. It's false advertising.
One of the things they did was they tested the bread and butter that you could get with the meal along with it. Turns out butter has a lot of fat.
The butter is high in butter.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, science guys. Gene, what do you got?
A tin plate portrait of Maggie Thatcher. It's a 14-foot high tin plate portrait of Maggie Thatcher is causing a stir in Wales. An artist has put it up inside the glass facade of the Assembly in Wales next to another 14-foot portrait of a prominent figure in the Labour Party, Nye Bevan. Now, Nye Bevan was responsible for the National Health Service that England is so famous for.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some assembly members in Wales who say it is an insult to the people to put up a portrait of Maggie Thatcher. The artist is defending the choice, though. He says, more than virtually any other politician, these two have had an influence over the lives we all lead in Wales. And he has some good company. Other assembly members say it belongs there.
Maggie Thatcher, the Iron Lady, in tin.
In tin.
Yeah. Ian.
I call her Margaret. But that's just me.
You're very formal.
I am.
Yeah.
Ian, what do you have to say?
Well, I have a most viewed from the Casper Star Tribune in Wyoming, one of my favorite papers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this story is about prairie dogs killing prairie dogs. Sorry, any opportunity to use that piece of sound.
Dramatic prairie dog.
Okay, there's a that's the fifth annual prairie dog killing contest.
That
they're holding. Yeah, because think about it. Like, prairie dogs, you know, they have those little holes.
Yeah.
They pop up out of the ground.
Right.
You know, shooting
them
would be fun if, you know, you didn't kill them or, you know, you're using rubber darts. Because it's like, it's basically like a video game. They pop up or like the whack-a-mole, except it's shoot a prairie dog.
Correct.
So this, as you might imagine, is stirring up a little what we call controversy. People are very upset. You know, they say that this is inhumane. Wyoming allows
prairie dog apologists.
Well, actually, there's a group called the Prairie Dog Coalition that's in opposition to the Prairie Dog Posse, which is a sort of support group for people who like to kill the prairie dog and feel like, you know, they've been treated
group.
Unfairly.
They feel misunderstood.
Yes.
Also Jay-Z's original rap group.
Yeah, and in addition, one thing I thought was interesting is apparently on these shoots, these guys are using these non-jacket hollow point bullets. That's the popular bullet. And these, it's really
gross.
They're
cop killer bullets is what they are.
Well, prairie dogs for sure.
Right.
The term they use is they missed the prairie dogs. They basically like blow up the prairie dogs, and these bullets separate into these sand-sized particles of lead. So any scavenger, a hawk that might come along and eat the prairie dog is going to get lead poisoning. So it has like a larger kind of ecological consequence.
Mm. That's a great, I mean, not a great thing to happen, but a fascinating story.
Thanks,
Trisha.
Ian. Trisha.
I have a story about ammo, too, but I'm going to do that one second. My first one is going
to... You've ruined the segue.
Ruined the segue. Number one on Google Trends this morning, Hamilton Jordan. He is a former political strategist and aide to Jimmy Carter, President Carter, who died yesterday after battling cancer for 22 years.
Carter didn't die.
Hamilton Jordan died, excuse me.
The pronoun should refer to the last proper noun.
Anyway.
Pardon me. Yes.
Well taken. So apparently Hamilton Jordan had various forms of cancer over the last 22 years, and he just died yesterday. There'll be a memorial service for him on Friday. He's known, he was a key figure in President Carter's 1976 presidential campaign, and he's credited with conceiving the strategy of having Carter campaign in early states, you know, targeting every state, but especially the ones that vote early in the primaries. And, you know, later he went on to work for Ross Perot.
Yes. So Carter won Iowa, and this is what made him, because Iowa wasn't even a big deal then. So traces all back to Ham Jordan.
And my second story is one of the most emailed at MSNBC.com. This is the ammo story. The headline, Rising Ammo Costs Pinch Gun Owners. And basically, you know, it's all about the price of metal. It's shooting up there, excuse the pun. And so it's actually affecting people who buy bullets and bullet casings. So apparently the price of assault rifle ammunition has jumped from $80 a case of 1,000 rounds 2 years ago to $250 for a similar case today. 9mm shells have jumped from $10 to $17. That's quite a bit. And it's affecting police forces who have to buy ammo. But I know somebody who's probably happy about this. That's Chris Rock.
You don't need no gun control. You know what you need? We need some bullet control. We need to control the bullets. That's right. I think all bullets should cost $5,000. For a bullet. You know why? Because if a bullet costs $5,000, there'll be no more innocent bystanders.
I'm sorry, but I think Chris Rock is a modern-day prophet. That man is wise.
My favorite Rodney Dangerfield bullet joke is, I grew up in a tough neighborhood. Tough neighborhood. They wouldn't shoot you. They'd go up to you and push the bullet in. Matt.
Try to follow that, Matt Martinez.
I will. One of the most emailed at NPR right now at the most viewed list is a story by NPR's Ketza Levine. She usually talks about plants and all things gardening.
She is the doyenne of dirt.
She is, but this time she took up meat, made in the lab meat. The headline is, Lab-Grown Meat a Reality, but Who Will Eat It? Here's Ketza Levine.
I've had easier stories to tell, certainly more bucolic ones. I'd much rather describe cows grazing in meadows than their cells being grown in labs. In fact, even though the idea has been kicking around for a century, it has never seemed a good time to talk about man-made meat. But it's had some famous proponents, including that pragmatic carnivore Winston Churchill, who in 1932 more or less said this.
How strange it is that we have to culture and grow a whole chicken when all I want to eat is the breast meat. The time will come when we'll be able to culture all the chicken breasts that we wish without having to sacrifice a single bird.
I say more or less because that was a British biologist paraphrasing. We'll meet him shortly. Anyway, Churchill was paraphrasing too, likely inspired by the work of Alexis Carrel. At the time of Churchill's comment, Dr. Carrel had been keeping alive a cultured piece of chicken heart tissue for 20 years. It wasn't overflowing the sides of his bathtub or anything. The Nobel Prize-winning scientist kept the tissue fresh and small. But his experiment, which outlived him, fed many an imagination.
My name is Frederick Pohl, and with Cyril Kornbluth, I wrote the book called The Space Merchants.
In that 1952 sci-fi novel, tissue-cultured meat gets a starring, if inglorious, role. It's the starter ingredient for an ever-growing lumpen food source known affectionately as Chicken Little.
This is her nest, he said proudly. I looked and gulped. She was a gray-brown, rubbery hemisphere some 15 yards in diameter. Dozens of pipes ran into her pulsating flesh. You could see that she was alive.
Yum. Turns out Frederick Pohl, now almost 90, suspected his novel wouldn't stay science fiction long.
Actually, when Cyril and I wrote the book, I thought we would see much of it actually happening. Sliced chicken from the delicatessen is probably a lot like the Chicken Little meat would look.
Most carnivores don't fear deli meat, nor do they spend much time at all worrying about where their meat comes from. So pity the malign scientist who, to no one's applause, is knocking himself out this very minute to grow tissue-cultured meat. Yep, it's a happening thing in labs from Norway to North Carolina, and it's being done exactly the same way we already grow patches of human skin. All that takes is a skin cell marinated in a nutrient-rich concoction, and within a few weeks, it's pretty much ready to wear, according to Brian Ford, our former Churchill and author of The Future of Food. We can culture bits of all sorts of distinct tissues.
But meat is a complex mixture of tissues. Under the microscope, you can see all sorts of gristly bits and fatty bits and muscly bits. And it's this sort of mosaic of different cell types that changes cells into what we know as meat. And that is a problem that nobody has successfully as yet addressed.
But somebody is getting close.
I personally believe that this is an inescapable future. That's short answer.
Vladimir Mironov is a biologist at the Medical University of South Carolina, and among that handful of scientists culturing meat from animal tissue. Dr. Mironov's long answer involves turning formless, textureless patches of the stuff into mass-produced form, like meat sheets, or what we might call affectionately, schmeat. What stands between Dr. Mironov and Schmeat right now is production models, production facilities, venture capital, oh, and consumer demand.
Does people want this? Does market ready? That's the main question. Technology, I think it's doable, and it's, if you have reasonable investment, it can be done. But the question is, you can create product which nobody wants to buy, or it's too expensive to buy. So the right timing is everything.
Okay, so is this the right time? One unlikely nonprofit says yes, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. PETA recently announced a $1 million contest to create commercially viable chicken meat, sacrificing neither chicken nor egg. The deadline is 2012, the contest rules Herculean, and the prize money, paltry. But the thinking is pragmatic. If people must have meat, and factory farming's an animal nightmare, why not find a high-tech alternative? Which brings up one last point, the taste of schmeat. Chicken, right? Not so, says a source who has sampled tissue-cultured turkey. It tasted like turkey.
That's NPR's Ketzel Levine. You can find the link to this story and all the stories you heard on The Most online at npr.org/Brian Park.